Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. It's well accepted that healthcare in the United States is expensive, too expensive for what we get in terms of outcomes. But is it humane? That is, do our systems of care, for the purpose of healing, health, and wellness, treat us, the patients, or as you'll hear my guest today argue, its clients, in a humane fashion? Summer Knight began her career as a firefighter and paramedic. She eventually became a doctor, and after a stint in practice, went on to public health, becoming the chief medical officer for the state of Florida, and then several entrepreneurial roles. She's currently a managing director in the healthcare and life sciences practice at Deloitte Consulting. In her new book, Humanizing Healthcare, Knight relates the tragic story of her son Nick's rare cancer and difficult time with treatment, including feeling not only uncared for by health professionals, but at times outright assaulted by them. It's what's prompted her to write this book, from her current vantage point advising large companies, but filtered through the lens of numerous personal tragedies. Dr. Summer Knight, author of Humanizing Healthcare, How to Hardwire Humanity into the Future of Health, is my guest today on Studio Tulsa Medical Monday. I'd like to start by referencing an article that you wrote that was, I guess, appeared on many platforms, but I read it in the online healthcare journal called Stat, which is a publication of the Boston Globe. But essentially, you're calling on us to ban the word patient. Can you tell us why you want to ban that term and how you would replace it?
Well, I put that article out, which, as you're indicating, came out by Stat, but then was actually syndicated across 10 different platforms and had, within the first 2 hours, about 5 million viewers access way. And the idea behind that article was to really begin a conversation around what does the word patient do in the relationship of healthcare consumers, such as maybe you and I and other people in your audience. What does that mean to us as healthcare consumers? And then what does it also mean to other stakeholders within the ecosystem? And this actually tags into the book Humanizing Healthcare and really thinking about the activated consumer and how we can activate that individual to take more control over their healthcare journey. And if we all agree, or if many of us agree, that that is an appropriate lens for them, then do we need a new word? And I give the example from my practice where I would call people who we cared for in our practice clients and would actually have a conversation with them about being the captain of their ship or the CEO of their life, and that we were there as their first mate, and we would support them with our expertise, but ultimately they were the ones in charge of making decisions. And that's why we use the terminology of clients rather than patients, because patients felt much more as though they were not in a driver's seat situation and not as much a member of the team around their health.
Yeah, there's a passivity to it, whereas the metaphor of being a captain of one's own ship, there's an agency to that. So you write that patients in your previous practice, that's how you would kind of introduce yourself in the sort of opening spiel. You're the captain of your ship. I'm going to be your first mate. And I think you said most people warmed up to that metaphor, but others didn't, but that was few and far between. How did that go over?
So, as you can imagine, many people who came to see our practice, and I'll give you an example, you know, word of mouth is very important for physicians starting their new practice. And many people who came to the practice, actually, I believe, came either because they heard of that approach or stayed because they liked the approach. And then there were some that would say after the spiel, because I always had a conversation with them, with the individual. They were completely clothed. It would be, you know, I would position it as you're interviewing me to decide if you want me to be your first mate. And it would also share that, hey, if you're not incorporating the advice that I or my team is bringing to you and into your life, then please do us all a favor and fire me. And many of them would really respond positively. A few of them would be like, you ain't from around here, and we would just never see them again. But that's okay, right? Because, you know, I think in all of the world and so many different opportunities, one size doesn't fit all. And that approach may not be appropriate for everybody on their health journey. So we do get into the book on levels of activation and even talk about folks who, you know, are actually defeated or do not want to take ownership or activation, and even the terrified consumer who doesn't even want to be associated with their health journey.
Yeah, and so when you talk about using the word consumer, or, you know, I do like the term client because it does imply mm-hmm. a certain amount of responsibility and obligation, even a fiduciary sense in a way that, like, we're, as a physician or as a healthcare provider, we're going to do our darndest best to do what's right for the patient, and, you know, in regard to the sort of best available medical evidence. But on top of that, even the finances, although I know doctors are a little bit spottier about that in terms of, like, we often don't understand how much things we prescribe, recommend, or prescribe, you know, cost, which is challenging. But so in that idea of consumer-driven healthcare, that's sort of a buzzword phrase we hear a lot. I mean, that's a problem, and you definitely go into detail in that in the book, which is there's such a lack of transparency about prices in healthcare, and there's such really almost a mystifying layer. So if I am going for just a routine visit at a doctor's office, I might be able to get a price, but if goodness sakes the doctor prescribes something, no one can tell me on the spot what it's going to cost based on what insurance I have, or what my, you know, I might know ahead of time what my copay will be, but I don't know what the out-of-pocket expense might be depending, again, on my level of insurance. I certainly am not going to know how much that MRI they're recommending that I get is going to cost, and depending on whether it's at a, you know, a hospital-based facility or a freestanding radiology center. I mean, how do you address that, or what are your proposed solutions, I think, for people to be able to be more active in their own healthcare?
Well, that's why I very much indexed on a framework for the humanizing healthcare revolution. And the idea is to really create a life sciences and healthcare ecosystem where care and treatment of disease, prevention, health, and well-being, note that I add that, occurs in a manner that respects, elevates, and activates consumers, creating value for those individuals, as well as sustainability for the entire system, for example, at the population, national, and even global, you know, perspectives. And to get there, we have to have a revolution that is past the current change that's happening today. And that is addressed in the book from the perspective of a framework. And that framework approaches change at three different levels. So from an interpersonal interaction relationship level, and we index on that as the ultimate goal of creating therapeutic alliances, which is a bond between the healthcare consumer, aka client, and their healthcare team and their natural support network of family, friends, and volunteers that's based on a mutual sense of caring, a goal towards health optimization and trust. And that it's really about creating that longitudinally and really indexing on optimizing healthfulness, whether or not somebody has a chronic or complex condition. The second part of that framework is organizational, and how do organizations begin to really think about and act upon and change their strategy where the core goal is around that activated consumer. And so what do they need to do from a cultural perspective? What do they need to do from, you know, an operational perspective to really index on optimizing that activated consumer, but also recognizing, as I mentioned earlier, that there's so many levels of where consumers are on their journey. And so how do we move them up the chain more and more? And then the third space is how do these organizations work within the more macro. So for example, how would they, based on their strategic approach, how would they work with the greater ecosystem from maybe a policy perspective? What partners are more aligned that they should begin to work with based on this focus around the activated consumer? what are the joint metrics of success? Because many people who've talked to me about the book really agree with this idea around the activated consumer and need to better construct the value levers that can be measured in the short term and the long term of the impacts that they're creating.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa. It's Medical Monday. I'm John Schumann. My guest today is Dr. Summer Knight, who is a managing director in the life sciences and health area at Deloitte. And she's the author of the new book, Humanizing Healthcare, a call to hardwire humanity into the future of health. You mentioned talking about natural support networks in the last segment. I just was curious if you could elaborate on that a little further, because you give a really good example of that, which is that a lot of times people that are pretty sick or have a chronic illness and wind up hospitalized turn out to have many more people invested or interested in their well-being and overall health than we often think of. Of course, we think of immediate family, but it turns out there are many layers of people, coworkers or distant family members or neighbors. And caregiving is really a team sport and shouldn't be, you know, all too often falls to kind of the very immediate family, be it a spouse or a parent or an adult child or something like that. And so I was wondering if you could elaborate a little bit on that whole idea of natural support networks.
I give several examples in the book, including one from my own family experience, that for our situation, which for your audience, I'm a sandwich generation caregiver, so had both experience caring for, you know, older people in our home and aging in place in their own homes, as well as then my own child became ill with a terminal condition. And when that happened, I remember sitting at about 4 a.m. in the hospital room. I could not get to sleep, and my son had just fallen asleep, and sending out a note to, of all things, my basketball team, because we were supposed to be meeting at 8 in the morning. And I just meant to send a note to say to them, hey, listen, I'm out for this week. And the horror and terror of what I was going through just kind of unleashed itself. And I sent more than that and explained why. And the response from a group of women who I just would play basketball with, a few of them I had a stronger relationship with, but we were new to the community. The response was shocking in such a positive way that I quickly realized that I had a free army of people, many of whom I didn't even know well, that were willing to lean in because I actually asked for help. And it was such a big learning experience. And then later, as we recognized that this was going to be a long journey, and we stood up our digital care activation platform between the two hospitals that were helping us, as well as our healthcare systems, as well as our natural support network of family, friends, and volunteers, that the amount of service that this group gave to us was so significant, all the way from running and getting prescriptions that I just didn't have time to go get. You know, when the doctors, we would be maybe in a clinic and he would be getting a treatment, and then they would send us this prescription, someone would grab it from the pharmacy, all the way to partnering with us as we started going into more challenging treatments and even research. And so I have said a number of times that specifically for that journey, if that natural support network had not become part of our free army, I'm not sure that I would have survived the journey that we went through, because it was so emotionally and physically challenging that without that group, it would have been very challenging for me to continue my role as a parent, you know, because I had other children, but also other roles that I had. And it made it so I was more available to my son, but it also gave my son additional outlets because, you know, other people could volunteer to take on part of those journeys. And frankly, at some point, you know, we love each other a ton, but you know, after you're together with somebody day in and day out for not a great journey, having refreshing faces in the journey definitely was helpful for him.
Yeah, I mean, I really like how you explain that story, and I think it's definitely worth sharing a little more detail. You write about in the book so movingly and achingly about your son Nick and the tragedy of him being struck by this very rare form of cancer at age 14, and you know, just as he's on the cusp of I guess adulthood, growing, and just stopped both him and really you in your tracks, and how this you just said about how unexpectedly these layers of caregivers really offered support in a way that that you hadn't expected. And I thought that was really a beautiful thing. And that's part of your message, too, I think, is that not only is there help available where we wouldn't think to look for it, but this whole idea, and because you're, you're involved in consulting now, and you've been in insurance, and you've been in healthcare tech, you talk a lot about this sort of dry concept of interoperability, which is not your word, but the word I think the government uses for essentially stimulating or encouraging doctors and hospitals and healthcare practices to use technology. But everything is siloed, right? So we have these walled gardens of electronic medical records that are very sort of cumbersome and difficult to move from one place to the other. And so you address that in your book as well. And I guess I was wondering how you see that moving forward.
Yeah, the way we lay that out, we give an example called the healthfulness hubs. And it's the way I termed it is it's an example of care in the not so distant future. And that's because the technologies that we have available to us today are here to activate on creating a digital care activation platform, which for the healthfulness hubs in the view that we create, it is actually the infrastructure of the organization rather than a bricks and mortar being the infrastructure that we're used to. So the idea is that that infrastructure is built specifically to serve the client, aka healthcare consumer, and it also shows a redevelopment of the care team, of the clinical care team, taking into recognition that we have a very talented clinical capabilities, specifically in this country, the U.S., and other areas of the globe, obviously. However, that's a limited resource. And the healthcare and wellness needs is nearly an unlimited need. And so, therefore, how can we really leverage this limited, talented resource while meeting and while optimizing the ability to meet the needs? And so, besides that digital care activation platform and using nudges not only for the clinical team, but also for the healthcare consumer and their natural support network, to be able to also reorganize that team. So we talk about where different organizations have utilized guides as creating a relationship, how we would reorchestrate the actual clinical team, and how we would even change the operations of an organization built around meeting the consumer where they are, which is not necessarily requiring them to come to the healthcare system, but rather the healthcare system come to them.
Okay, interesting. So it's the health hubs. And you used another word in there that you articulate on in the book that I'd love you to just define a little further, healthfulness. Can you share with us what you mean when you use the term healthfulness?
Absolutely. And I love that term because the idea of healthfulness was developed in order to recognize that not everybody is starting out from a center of pure health, right? Because, people have been impacted by chronic condition or have different levels of disabilities, et cetera. And so we cannot consider that everybody is going to come from the same level. But what we can consider is that we have a goal to optimize that individual's healthfulness, whatever that could be. And for some people, they have what that vision could be. For other people, I've seen, even in my own practice, we've been able to, when they really do choose to become the captain of their ship, that they have been able to reverse disease. So there's been examples of diabetics and hypertensives who have been able to not only slow or stop their disease progression, but some have actually been able to reverse it, disease progression, based on making certain changes. And not all people and all diseases can actually be changed by things like lifestyle decisions. But the predominance, of, I think last stat I saw was about 75% of chronic conditions have a significant lifestyle component to them, which they can impact.
And Summer Knight, you have had pretty incredible peripatetic career, I got to say. And I was hoping you could just share with our listeners. I mean, it's in your bio. It says, I don't know if you started this way, but at one point, I think early on, you were a paramedic and firefighter, or a firefighter who was a paramedic, and then, you know, became a physician and practiced as a doctor for a number of years before becoming an entrepreneur, and somehow then wound up as the chief medical officer for the state of Florida. How did all that come about?
Well, I think you could summarize that maybe I can't keep a job.
It's probably people kept recognizing your potential.
I was going to say, don't share that with many people. But as you point out, I did start out my career as a firefighter paramedic. And through that experience of living that life and being exposed to it, did actually see that there was an opportunity for me to become a physician. And it wasn't the straight path that many physicians take. It was by leveraging those experiences that I think allowed me to have an edge to be able to get into this career. I always also say, try again. So I was also pretty persistent. And then I think from there, also being prepared yet open for different opportunities in order to learn of a need and then fill that need. And then lastly, to take that role and really give your heart and soul to it. And so many of the roles that I've been able to take, whether, as you pointed out, the chief medical officer for the state of Florida, I've been an executive at a couple of different national health plans, and also have been a leader of a healthcare provider organization as well. So in each of those, it was really indexing in on what are the most important impacts that one could make during our tenure in that space, and focusing in on those impacts, which has, I think, been the key for success for my career in being able to be activated by those opportunities.
Well, one of your takeaway messages, you know, the title of the book, Humanizing Healthcare, you want to hardwire humanity into the future of health. And when I think about hardwiring something, I tend to think of, you know, wires or technology. And of course, you've had a career that it's been adjacent and involved with technology. And you talk in the book about different ways we can use technology and how younger folks tend to be more interested in using wearable devices to track various biometrics and things like that. And then that's going to be definitely a part of our current healthcare, but much more so a part of our future healthcare. But one of the morals or takeaways is technology won't save us. And I guess that seems like as good a place as any to end on, because tell us what you mean by that.
Yes, that is correct. We have the technology capabilities to do everything that we walk through in the book. And as we delineated in the framework, that the framework indexes not on the technology, because I think many people in technology would say that's the easy stuff. The real work happens in the organizational change on how care can be delivered. And probably even more importantly is how do we work with clients, healthcare consumers, to actually become more activated and move them up that stream. And that's by creating the therapeutic alliances that we talked about earlier in the conversation, creating those longitudinal bonds. And yes, the technology can serve as the infrastructure to scale those therapeutic alliances, but the real work is actually in the approach and the culture and is really the differentiator of those organizations that are going to win in this race to being able to serve the healthcare consumer of tomorrow.
Summer Knight, I wanted to point out to our listeners that the proceeds from your book, Humanizing Healthcare, are all going to a nonprofit that's called One Humankind, and that's with the numeral one followed by the phrase humankind.org. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I would love to, because it makes me laugh, as you can tell. So One Humankind is those proceeds are planned to be directed towards health inequities. And there is actually right now five major corporations that have committed to partnering to create our initial Humanizing Healthcare conference on health equities. And where we want to index on is the hypothesis that connectivity could be the greatest indicator of health inequities or equities, you know, today and in the future. So kind of a very interesting take on health inequities. And then the One Humankind organization actually evolved as a work around highlighting the mosaic nature of today's families and how that impacts people, individuals coming from those families and their community at large, aka even individuals who have contact with mosaic families, and the real value that those bring to the robust and diverse fabric of our country. And so that's I'm very proud of that piece.
Well, it's definitely that sounds like that conference is really something to look forward to. The name of the book is Humanizing Healthcare: Hardwire Humanity into the Future of Health, and it's by my guest today, Dr. Summer Knight, who is a managing director at Deloitte. Summer Knight, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me. This has been a lot of fun, and I look forward to hearing back from your audience on what they think about the book, because you might not exactly agree with it. I've had some doctors call me and say it frankly scares them, but I do think it's a great conversation to begin to have about using humanizing healthcare as our industry North Star and hearing from healthcare consumers on their perspective on this journey. So it's not just it is by far not just a business book. It's actually a revolution, the beginning of a revolution. And we're seeing quite a bit more information coming out based on not only the book, but actually other leaders indexing on this revolution.
Summer Knight is a physician and managing director at Deloitte. Her new book is Humanizing Healthcare: How to Hardwire Humanity into the Future of Health. Well, that's our show for this Medical Monday. Studio Tulsa is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of KWGS or the University of Tulsa. For Studio Tulsa, I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. Thanks for listening, and please stay safe out there.